Jeanette Walls lived one version of the American dream. Today, Walls is a famous gossip columnist in New York on MSNBC. But her childhood was anything but glamorous. Walls grew up with nomadic parents who were often fleeing creditors and living in cars, abandoned buildings, and shacks. Walls' memoir about her childhood is called The Glass Castle. Here she is reading an excerpt.
I was sitting in a taxi, wondering if I had overdressed for the evening, when I looked out the window and saw Mom rooting through a dumpster. It was just after dark. A blustery March wind whipped the steam coming out of the manholes, and people hurried along the sidewalks with their collars turned up. I was stuck in traffic 2 blocks from the party where I was heading. Mom stood 15 feet away. She had rags tied around her shoulders to keep out the spring chill and was picking through the trash while her dog, a black and white terrier mix, played at her feet. Mom's gestures were all familiar. The way she tilted her head and thrust out her lower lip when studying items of potential value that she'd hoisted out of the dumpster. The way her eyes widened with childish glee when she found something she liked. Her long hair was streaked with gray, tangled and matted, and her eyes had sunk deep in their sockets. But still, she reminded me of the mom she'd been when I was a kid, swan diving off cliffs and painting in the desert and reading Shakespeare aloud. Her cheekbones were still high and strong, but the skin was parched and ruddy from all those winters and summers exposed to the elements. To the people walking by, she probably looked like any of the thousands of homeless people in New York City. It had been months since I laid eyes on Mom, and when she looked up, I was overcome with panic that she'd see me and call out my name, and that someone on the way to the same party would spot us together, and Mom would introduce herself, and my secret would be out. I slid down in the seat and asked the driver to turn around and take me home to Park Avenue.
Jeanette Walls reading from her memoir, The Glass Castle. She told Steve Paulson that her current life in New York is a surprising one, considering her background.
There's a certain irony to the fact that all of these years I've been digging out the truth about other people and was hiding the truth about myself. I sometimes wonder whether or not there was some sort of, that was somehow what motivated me. But no, it's not at all what people expected. It was a secret for me, my past, and it's something that I hid. And there was no doubt in my mind that if the truth got out about me, that I would lose my job and that I would lose all of my friends and that people would basically run for the exits when I came into a room. But I've never been so wrong about anything in my life.
You were worried that people would find out that you had been really, really poor.
Not just poor. We looked up at poor people when I was growing up. There were things that were very difficult for me to write because I'd never told anybody about these things. You know, that I went in the garbage cans at school to fish for other kids' lunches and, you know, went into the stalls in the ladies' room to eat the sandwiches that other people had thrown away. I was ashamed. I was just ashamed of who and what I was and my past. You know, I underestimated people's capacity for compassion. But I think, moreover, I think I underestimated the degree to which everybody has something in their past that they think makes them somehow less of a person. Maybe not quite as extreme as mine, but something.
Were your parents just not able to hold down regular jobs, or did they just not want to?
My parents are both highly intelligent people. Well, my father is since died, but they're both very intelligent. My mother has a couple of college degrees, but they both wanted their freedom. They abhorred rules and structure, and they just live life by their own rules.
What kinds of places did you live in?
For the first 10 years of my life, I lived in more towns than I could count. We lived in little mining towns in the Southwest, or we lived in little gambling towns, or sometimes we slept in the car, sometimes we slept in cardboard boxes. Sometimes we went to places like Las Vegas and lived in hotels, or San Francisco and slept on the beach. We just lived wherever Dad decided to move us at the moment. He called it doing the skedaddle. We were always running away from people. Dad said it was the CIA or the mafia, but Mom said it was really just the bill collectors.
So you became a really good student, a model student.
First of all, I loved school because it was really warm and dry. But also, you know, to my parents' credit, for everything that was wrong with them, they had instilled in us from a very early age a love of reading and education. And I loved school and I loved the teachers. And for the most part, the teachers were very, very good to me. In fact, I was named after a teacher. She had been my father's teacher. And she was the first person who told him that he might actually amount to something someday. And then when we went back to West Virginia, she was still teaching. And I became the editor of the school newspaper. And some people tried to get me kicked off because I dressed so shabby and smelled pretty funky. And she went to bat for me. So I love the teachers for a lot of reasons.
Hmm. Were you a pariah in school?
Oh, I was worse than a pariah. I had no friends at all. But it was through the newspaper finding out that I could write about people, that I could actually go to the dances and go to the ball games for the first time. And it was sort of, it was my entree into becoming not a big somebody, but just somebody at all. And I fell completely in love with journalism, and I saw very quickly that it was not only my way to be accepted by my peers, but my way out.
So this was the makings of a gossip columnist
then. Yeah, absolutely. I saw that, at least I felt that without that identity, I was nothing. But once I had a camera around my neck and a pen and pad in my hand, that I might be accepted. And it was a big shock that I actually could belong somewhere.
Now, when you say you were worse than a pariah, what do you mean?
Oh, kids threw things at us. We were a joke in town. You know, other kids would dare each other to go up around our house. It was pretty bad. And they teased us. I got beat up all the time. But my brother and my sisters, we all fought with each other and for each other. So, you know, on the upside, we really learned to be pretty tough scrappers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. I mean, the picture that you portray is, I mean, it's sort of this interesting mix of things because on the one hand, this was a hard life that you've described, but I get the sense that there was no self-pity in your family. I mean, that was a value that was just alien to your parents. I mean, they never went on welfare. Obviously, they could have if they had chosen to. And there was this ethic of stick up for yourself.
Not only stick up for yourself and not only not feeling sorry for yourself, but Mom always felt and to a large degree, gave us the impression that we were better off than the other kids because we might not have running water, but they weren't reading Shakespeare. So Mom said, you know, try not to look down on them. They don't get art lessons like you kids do. So there was that. And my story is a bizarre contradiction of incredible deprivation in certain areas, but a lot of wealth in other areas. I mean, Mom and Dad did not feed us and did not clothe us very well. But when it came to matters of the mind and soul, they gave us a lot. And ideally, you get both. But if I had to choose, I think I would probably take the mind and soul.
Mm-hmm. Did you buy into their philosophy?
Certainly for the first part of my life, I did. When I was a kid, I thought we had a great life. We could do anything. We could go catch horny toads. We could go out on adventures. I could shoot my dad's gun. We could do whatever we wanted. As I got a little bit older, I think I started seeing through my father's lies. So I rejected everything that they were. Lately, I think I've come to realize that they did give us a lot. So I've sort of come full circle in some ways.
Now, at a fairly young age, you were still a teenager. You hopped on a bus and moved to New York City.
I was 17 years old, and my sister and I hatched a plan to come to New York. She was going to be an artist, and I was going to be a writer. And if I'd had a lick of sense, I would have realized it was a crazy thing to do. But I didn't know any better and came up, and I enrolled in high school up here, and I got an internship and got a job at a newspaper. And I thought I'd just died and gone to heaven. I thought I'd made it. But then the editor there suggested I should probably go to college. And while I was in college, I was listening to the news one day, and there was a report about a van breaking down on the FDR Drive, and the contents had spilled out, and the dog was playing keep away with the cops. And my heart sort of sank because that's exactly the sort of thing that was happening to us all the time when I was growing up. But I didn't think a whole lot more about it until later on that day I got a call, and it was my mother, and she said, Jeanette Kunz, we've moved to New York. And I thought, oh, no. I ran away from my past, and it's catching up with me. And I said, Mom, did your van break down on the FDR Drive? And she said, how did you know? And I said, it was on the radio. And she took that as a really good sign because they just come to New York and already they're famous. But I wanted nothing to do with them. In fact, I told them, please don't tell anybody. You're my parents. Because for the first time in my life, I could actually feel like I was sort of normal. And I didn't have to make excuses for my parents and my family. And I didn't have a past as far as most people were concerned. And I didn't want to be saddled with these weird parents again. But things have a funny way of exposing themselves eventually.
Well, and part of this piece of the story is also really interesting because your parents were basically homeless. I mean, they lived in abandoned buildings they were squatters.
They were actually homeless for a while. They were living on the streets. And then what happened is they took over abandoned buildings on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And there was a squatters movement to take over these buildings. It was, you know, the early 80s, and this was going on. The squatters were fighting with the city. And My parents are incredibly articulate people, so they were always being interviewed on the news and in newspapers. And every time I turned on the TV, it felt like there's my father being interviewed about British common law or quoting John Steinbeck. And it was just mortifying. And I was terrified that this would get out about me. And so I lived in this fear that people would find out who I really was.
And meanwhile, you had become this well-known gossip columnist. You were very plugged into the scene in New York, going to the right parties, living in fancy places by this time, making a lot of money, I presume.
Yes, and hobnobbing with these very well-to-do people who were complaining all the time about those filthy, noisy squatters on the Lower East Side and what they're doing to property values. And I was completely, you know, living between these two worlds, absolutely.
And what's interesting is that your parents, I gather, were not proud of you at this point. I mean, they didn't think that you had become this great success. They sort of thought you'd sold out.
My mother especially. She wanted to know where the values that she raised me with. Here I was a yuppie. It was the worst thing in the world. And my brother had become a cop. It was their children had completely rebelled against them, and they were completely mortified.
Why?
Because they thought that I'd sold out, that my values, that their values, freedom and doing what you chose and not working for the boss man, that I'd abandoned that, and that they taught me this life of freedom and doing whatever it was that you pleased. And there I was, spending all this money on designer clothes, going to snooty parties, and worrying about what people thought of me.
And then for years, at least the way you write about this, you didn't tell people about your background. I mean, even close friends.
Oh, no.
This was all a big secret.
No, in fact, nobody knew. And when people asked me about my past, I would change the topic. In fact, there was only one person who sort of sat me down one time, and he said, there's something about your past that doesn't add up. And he said, everything about me, this was my best friend. And he said, everything about me, I know nothing about you. Whenever I ask you about your past, you change the topic. Why is that? And I said, well, I think if you knew everything about me, you'd drop me as a friend. He said, what do you think, this is high school? I'm going to drop you because of your past? And I refused to tell him. He said, I don't want to be your friend anymore then. It's too insulting to me to think that you think I wouldn't accept you for who I am. So I broke down and told him the whole story. And his first reaction was, that would make a great book. And this is the man I ended up marrying. He turned into my husband and was the person who basically duct taped me to the desk and said, you are writing this story.
Did you ever feel disloyal to your parents, either in the act of telling this or how you distanced yourself from them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But certainly in how I distance myself from. I sort of kick myself. I feel like a knucklehead now. Like, what was I thinking? On the other hand, I've talked to some people who worked where I did, and they said, I completely understand why you didn't want anybody to know. It was a very snobbish place where your pedigree was very important and what schools you went to were.
And you'd gone to Barnard, so you had the pedigree
well,
to some degree.
Well, people thought I did, but I never went to private schools or boarding schools. People just assumed because I went to Barnard that I must have had a privileged background. But this is a place where, what country clubs your parents belonged to was important. So I thought that if they knew the truth about me, and that there might have been some truth to that. But yeah, I am pretty appalled that I was that cowardly. And I did feel like I was betraying them while I was writing it, too. And, my father, I don't think I could have written it when my father was alive. But I really wondered how my mother would take it. There's some pretty tough scenes about her. It's interesting, people's reactions to my mother. Some people think that she's a monster and should have never had children. Other people think she's a wonderful, unique, free spirit.
So she's been very supportive.
She's been fabulous. She's helped promote it. She was interviewed by Vanity Fair. She was interviewed by a number of people. And in fact, at one point, I wanted to thank her for being so great. And I said, Mom, I want to get you something to thank you. You think about something that you want. It can be big-ish, but you think about what it is that you want and we'll get it. And she said, I don't need to think about it. I know what I want. And she had her eye on an amber and silver bracelet. Antique Russian bracelet. And my first reaction was, Mom, I meant something practical, like a down payment on a house or a car or something. But I think one of the things I came to realize from writing the book is that what makes me happy isn't what makes my mother happy. And I have to accept, if she wants the darn bracelet, let her have it. It's going to cost me a lot less than a car. So, and she wears the bracelet and she's very happy. She still lives on the Lower East Side. Looks like she's going to be getting, the building's going to become legal. She's going to be able to buy it. She's getting heat for the first time in 15 years. And she's just a very happy woman. One of the people who interviewed her was very concerned that, you know, she's 70 years old, a couple of years older at this point. And she has no heat. And one of the people who interviewed her was very concerned. And he went off and secretly bought her an electric blanket and gave it to her. And he never heard back from her, of course. So he asked me, he said, just make sure your mother got it. And so I asked her, and she said, oh, yes, it was lovely. It was imported wool from Bloomingdale's. I said, well, have you used it? And she said, I have 4 down comforters and 3 fur coats. What do I want with an electric blanket?
Jeanette Walls is a former gossip columnist for New York Magazine and E! She currently appears on MSNBC. She's the author of The Glass Castle.